along with the chant.
Jai Jagadambe, Devi Maa Durga. Jai Jagadambe, Devi Maa Durga. Jai Jagadambe, Devi Maa Durga.
try chanting along with the next one, if you can. But I know after a while it becomes almost impossible. But participation is really important, to put yourself into the chants. Lakshmi doesn't particularly like my chanting. She keeps moving around.
Gopala, Gopala, Devaki Nandana Gopala.
Na na na.
By now, most of your mind should be half stoned or totally stoned. But maybe you can hear my voice. Turn your attention around. Instead of looking out, look within. The mind's eye, look within. And what do you see? Do you see emptiness? Do you see darkness? Do you feel energies coursing through your body? Do you feel love welling up from your gut, through your heart, out through your mouth and head? Is anything going on inside of you? And in all of that, that you look and turn and look within, is anywhere there an I, an Alan, a John, a Tim, a Keith, a Ryan, an Ed, a Joanne, Janet? Is there anywhere an emptiness in that emptiness, an entity which I can call me? Is there an entity to which the I thought points? Or is there no I entity? Even the feeling I am is empty. It's permeated by emptiness. Is it real? Am I real? Ask yourself that. Am I real? I look inside myself and all that I see is emptiness everywhere. From the top of my head to the bottom of my feet, throughout the entirety of my presence and my emptiness, there is no I. There is no I am. There's just presence. Presence permeating consciousness. Presence permeating the emptiness, which has its own light. But is there an I? If there is no I, what is the consequence? Who am I? There's that I thought floating around there. To what does it point? Does it point to the emptiness? Does it point to one's own presence? Does it point to one's heart? Or does it point nowhere and everywhere? This you must know for yourself. It's no good somebody else telling you what you're supposed to see. The Neo-Advaitins tell you what you're supposed to see. Your beingness and no I anywhere. And that's supposed to mean something. And they tell you concept after concept what that means of why. But you have to know for yourself, your own discrimination, your own search. What does it tell you? It'll tell you your own truth of who you are. I went to dinner last night with two students formerly of a different teacher. I met them a couple of months ago, one I've known for several months, probably going on a year, from the first live satsang we had in Los Angeles back in February. Of 2011. And like many early students, they had questions. And questions about questions. And questions about the questions about questions. And every time I'd give an answer, it would generate a new series of questions. And I could see they weren't really listening. I'd say a word, and it would generate another question in their minds. They'd say something about the energies they felt or something they witnessed. And they say, wouldn't witnessing imply X? And doesn't the consciousness itself come out of the witness? Doesn't it come out of the noumena, the unknown, come out of the self? And no matter what I said, there was a new question. That took them further and further away from themselves. However, being the calm, patient, loving guru that I am, I dealt with each question until I said, shut up, quit thinking. Look, when you ask questions, they're only about the relationship of one concept to another concept. It's all in the mind. What's the relationship between self and other? Between inner and outer? Between I and thou? And the mind and the subconscious? Between the absolute and the relative? Between the noumenal and the manifest? These are all just, Nisargadatta would say, bullshit. Well, actually, Ed would say that. But Nisargadatta would say, drop the concepts. Robert would say, drop the concepts, because you can never think your way out of the box. The mind has to drop, and that's what I've been trying to teach you with chanting, with meditation, with reading the Nisargadatta Gita, listening to sacred music, going inside and abiding in the self, finding the self. You get so the consciousness drops within into the inner emptiness. The mind drops away, and you can function without the mind. Become dumb as a rock. But some of you practice so strongly, so intently, you really do become dumb as a rock. That's a precondition where the mind doesn't function and you drop into samadhi. But so many don't want to do that. They want to be fully functional all the time and be in control and know what's going on and be strong and manifest themselves. They really don't like being helpless and knowing nothing. Filled with concepts. So, at one point, in order to shut up my dinner mates, I came spontaneously to a demonstration. This is the audiovisual part of our satsang tonight. I took the placemat, green on one side, clear white on the other. Said, imagine, on this green side and out here is all of consciousness. That's everything you see, the room, even your hand, the lights, the food, the person across from you, me. This is all on this side is consciousness. But on this side of the white side, there's nothing, no consciousness. Not nothingness being observed, the void being observed like you can do, but nothing, no consciousness, no subconsciousness, no nothing. Your essential nature, the noumenal self, is on this side. On this side is consciousness and the I am. And there's a connection point between the unmanifest, the absolute witness, and consciousness on this side, the green side, which is this little point, the I am. And this is where you look through from nothingness into consciousness, sort of like as a physical demonstration only. This is a metaphor. You peek out of nothingness and you become manifest here in the world. But most of you think you're the finger. You are manifest in the world, and you identify yourself with this finger. But really, you're the fist from which this finger comes, and you can't know anything about the fist, because only what you know is in consciousness, the I am. This is what you see out here. This is what you hear. This is what you touch. This is what you taste. This is what you feel. But what you really are is this side which is blank and empty, and there's no awareness whatsoever of inside. Now, this analogy only goes so far. This is for the physical senses. But But actually, after you practice yoga and meditation for a while, you do see inside. You begin seeing on this side of the blank wall. At first, when you look inside, you just see darkness. There's nothing there. Sometimes you start by seeing a light between the two eyes, the third eye, and it spreads, opens up, and gradually spreads over a period of 6 months or a year until it spreads throughout one's entire sense of presence. Then you feel a vast emptiness inside, too, which gradually becomes illuminated through meditation. And you can read about it's the emptiness of the self. It's the inner space lighted by consciousness. Consciousness itself provides its own illumination. So gradually, what was on this side, all of the external world as observed by the senses, that's all that we know. But after a while, practicing meditation, we begin to fill out this inner world. This inner world is of the mind. It's called the subtle body. It has no more reality than the external world. But it has all of the emptiness. It has the void, the internal void that one perceives. The eternal void that one perceives has the essential character of spaciousness and time. And the external world has an equivalent, space outside and the passage of time. But still there's a witness of all this witnessing. Still there's a witness that stands behind this and then watches the emptiness inside the body. Watches the arising of emotions inside the body. As you become more advanced in your meditation and your spiritual work, all of this inner world is also witnessed, and in a sense, you've moved backwards. You might say, this is the area of the subtle body, of the mind. And you move backwards into the causal body. This is where you begin to go unconscious. You're sitting in meditation, and you start to feel like you're going to sleep. Sometimes it's sleep, and sometimes it's just going into this deeper layer of consciousness. Way back here. And when you go deep enough, even this disappears. Consciousness disappears. The subtle body disappears. And you're left in a state of waking sleep where there's nothing. Just awareness of awareness. But you say, so what? In a sense, that's true. So what? It's just another appearance. Another level of beingness. And what we are has nothing to do with this. To this witness in the causal body, even behind that, there's a deeper self, the one that Ramana Maharshi talks about, the one Robert talks about, the one Nisargadatta talks about as prior to consciousness, the ultimate witness, Parabrahman, the absolute, that's untouched by all of these levels of consciousness. Most ordinary people are just aware of the external world and a little bit of the internal world. They're aware of feelings as they arise. But they're not aware of the emptiness. They're aware of emotions. They're aware of anger. They're aware of when their stomach hurts them or they have indigestion. But they're not aware, like you are, of all the different internal worlds, the subtle body and all the experiences there, the flowing of love, the feelings of ecstasy, the feeling of devotion, the feeling of surrender. None of that are most ordinary people aware of. But by developing spiritual practice, you become aware of these things. But even them you have to leave behind and go deeper. Deeper into the unknown. Deeper into unknowing itself. Because we clamor after knowing and knowledge and understanding. But we have to get deeper than mind, deeper than the emotions, into the causal body, and eventually into Parabrahman, where you can watch the coming and going of consciousness. And many of you, I know, are aware, even during your sleep, of the coming and going of consciousness. You see, it doesn't touch you. You're not affected. One moment you're awake, the next moment you're asleep, the next moment you're dreaming, the next moment you're awake again. And you feel the same as these levels of consciousness, these states of consciousness go by you. Conscious awareness comes and goes. Dreams come and go. Sleep comes and goes. And all the time, you're not touched and you feel aware and awake. And then you know that none of these states of consciousness have anything to do with you. You're beyond them. This is what I try to teach. There's more to it than that. Far more. But this is like the major first step. You're not the body. You're not the mind. You're not consciousness. Later on, you also discover that you do create the whole thing. But it's not you as an individual, John or Alan or Keith or Ryan or Tim or Ed. It's the nature of the universal consciousness to create this, which you also are. But that gets a little complicated, and I like to keep things simple. One step at a time. Just first realize that you are that which is beyond consciousness altogether. And then there's the music as new method, which is to combine this going into the infinite with becoming totally human. A hybrid of bhakti and jnana. What I've been talking about is pure jnana. Robert's way, Ramana's way, Nisargadatta's way. But now I'm adding the element of passion. Passionate love for knowledge, love for another, love for truth, surrender, God, passion. Without passion in Advaita, it's so easy to become lost. Lost in the emptiness, to be peaceful and feel nothing. Not be touched by emotions. I just was contacted by a woman yesterday who said she was in a place for a long time and still is of great peace, of spaciousness and emptiness. But there were no more emotions. How do I get my emotions back? How do I get my feelings back? How do I get my humanity back? Well, there's one way, which is the Nisargadatta way of concentrating on the I Am, which I've been using as a meditation tool. Read the Nisargadatta Gita, concentrate on the I Am. Love the I Am. Immerse yourself in the I Am. Listen to sacred music, because sacred music paralyzes the mind and allows the heart to function. And it brings out ecstasy and sometimes the flow of love. So you meditate on the Nisargadatta Gita. You fixate on the feeling of self, of your existence. Read Nisargadatta. Love yourself. Love that sense of existence. Or, if you're lucky, someone or something comes along that you love deeply, and it awakens in you that passion, that energy that fills out your sense of presence, that enlightens your beingness, fills you with energy, and the spiritual path becomes so easy then. You just follow your heart. It's like your head disappears. The mind goes into the background. and you operate from here. For me, sometimes it feels like everything above here is gone, and I'm just walking through life from my heart. There's no conflict. Perfect presence. No confusion. Perfect peace. But there are so many concepts to get through here. You know, like I mentioned, it's easy to get rid of the spiritual concepts because you only got those in the last few years about Atman and Brahman, existence and non-existence, the self and not self, karma, reincarnation, rebirth, the sayings in the various Gitas, the talk of emptiness. And some people hold on to these concepts so strongly. But shit, those are easy concepts to get rid of. That reminds me. Last week, I was watching Joanne. She was hosting. And Alan had said, we were trying to find out in the recordings of Robert whether a voice was of Ed Music or somebody else. And Alan said, you know, you can always tell whether it's Ed or not on whether you hear the word fuck or not. And so I was reminded of that because two-thirds of the way through satsang last time, I hadn't said fuck once. So I created a paragraph where I had three fucks in it. And I was watching Mamaji, Joanne. And after I finished that paragraph, she went like this. She knew it was me. Little humor there. But other concepts are so much more difficult to get rid of, like the use of swearing. Oh my God, he swears. How crude. What can he, in just a gutter guru? A gutter teacher. Guy that talks like that must be full of shit. True. But there are other concepts that are much harder to get rid of. Like morality. What's true morality? Was Osho's behavior truly those of a guru or Muktananda's? Or is Ramana Maharshi the only guru that ever existed because he's the only perfectly moral person that's ever been, who never looked at a woman, never read a dirty book, never laughed at a dirty joke, who always walked around with his nose up his ass, perfectly upright, the perfect guru, no faults, at least none that we know of? Or is a guru down to earth like Maizumi Roshi, with multiple affairs and hundreds of students that idolized him, and who was the greatest intellectual I've known in the world of Zen, with all of his personality faults and admitting them readily at satsang? Or what about Sun San Sunim, who only said, you've got to become dumb as a rock, stupid as a rock. Get those thoughts out of your mind. Function from your emptiness. Is that the correct thing? And what about the marriage? Is somebody who follows a spiritual path because their life is boring or their marriage is boring or dead? Are they cheating and committing virtual, what is that, adultery because they love somebody outside of their marriage or outside of their relationship? Where is the guilt here? They spend 2 or 3 hours a week listening to chanting, going to satsang, going to church, whatever it is. And their spouse or significant other thinks that they're cheating and not paying enough attention to them or to the family. And they get harangued and hassled. One side feels blaming, the other side feels blamed. There's all kinds of animosity. So what's the truth here? Who's right? Who's wrong? So many concepts that hold us. What about children? How do we raise children? What's the proper way? What about society? Do we pay income taxes or don't we? Do we complain bitterly about the poor, how they're robbing us of all of our money? Or do we complain bitterly about the rich because they're not giving enough? These are the important concepts. These are the vasanas. These are the beliefs and conditions that hold us so tightly into the world. Actually, after you get rid of the idea of sex and all the problems associated with sex, getting rid of the eye is really simple. There are so many terms, so many concepts that we hold on to so strongly and not even aware of it because they're so ground deeply in us. And if we can liberate ourselves from those, it's relatively easy to get rid of the eye, to have that kind of awakening. That's why I spend so much time in this area. I don't know of any other teacher that does it. Say, well, we don't want to hear about that. Work on that in your background. You come to satsang and you listen about karma and no I or no self or self. Osho spent a lot of time in these areas because he knew how important they were. And a lot of the teachers do, but they don't talk about it in the foreground. They only talk about it in the background in private. You must free yourself of these concepts, of your imprisonment with your husband or wife and children. Learn to operate from your heart, not with your concepts about how you should operate. Instead, lose your mind and operate from your heart. Let your heart tell you what to do. Almost nobody ever does. They do what their mind tells them to do. They don't know how to drop the mind. This is the problem of our society, of our world, our minds. Okay. I'm a little tired of Nisargadatta, and I'm hoping someday somebody comes along that can do dynamic readings, you know, with power and inflection. But in the meantime, you got me. This is from The Tiger's Cave by Trevor Leggett. It's out of print. It's been out of print for years. It's not on the internet anywhere as a PDF, so you're out of luck. So you're just going to have to listen to me. And it's about the memoirs, so to speak, of a Buddhist monk, Buddhist abbot, as a matter of fact, of a large temple in Japan. And it's his remarks about the Heart Sutra and also about how he was in his everyday life and how he failed to live up to the sutra or something else. And this is a very powerful book 30 years ago, 40 years ago, telling about his own personal experience of enlightenment and how he was a failure at it at many occasions. So let me read it to you. What is this monk's name anyway? I don't think it's ever stated. I guess it must be stated. By Abbot Obora of the Soto sect. And the Soto sect are the ones that don't have koans. You just sit in silence. You sit in your own sense of presence. And this is the abbot. In his discourses at Ehi Temple, Zen Master Dogen says, "When the clay is plentiful, the Buddha is big." By clay, he means raw passions, the mental operations in the mind within which seethe and rage unbridled. These are the clay. And the more abundant it is, the greater the Buddha into which it comes to be molded. The stronger the force of attachment, the greater the Buddha which is made. Do you ever get angry? No, I'm never angry. Such people have nothing to them. When the time of anger comes, when the whole body is ablaze with it, then it is that form of the Buddha must be seen. By coming to the taste of emptiness in the midst of illusion of the five skandhas, we really grasp the meaning of emptiness. In the Vimalakirti Sutra is the phrase, "In the soil of the high meadows, the lotus never grows. It's in the base slime and mire does the lotus grow." What are these words expressing? It's the truth that the passions are Bodhi wisdom. He is saying that the passions are the Bodhi wisdom, which means wisdom. The birth and death is nirvana. Passions are wisdom. That birth and death is nirvana. The lotus, of course, in the sense of having entered into the faith, of having realization. The lotus, of course, is the sense of having entered into the faith, of having realization. On the high ground, we find that our lotus-like state of Satori... On the high ground, we cannot find the lotus state of Satori. We cannot find on the high ground Satori. The lotus is a beautiful flower and surely grow in the dry, clean soil. But as a matter of fact, it does not grow high and dry in the pure soil of the meadow. It grows in the slime and the muck of passions. That's my saying. What is the mental state symbolized by the meadow? I suggest the following for consideration. In the heart of a man of elevated views and penetrating intellect, there is hardly entry into faith or Satori. As a rule, in what they call their study and so on, it is simply thinking as an intellectual operation. By means of the intellect, the Buddhist ideals of no-I and sameness are built up just as concepts, and people who think they fulfill themselves through these artificial concepts never have faith or realization. They have a belief in no self. I believe that a world of concepts where the no-I or sameness are the only things thought in the head, and where there is no effort at spiritual practice, is an empty ideal. This is precisely Neo-Advaita. Where there is no effort in spiritual practice, and no I is only a thought in the head, it's an empty ideal. It is only something thought about, and so it is an empty ideal which has no content. So easy to be enlightened in the mind because it's just concepts. But unless there's effort, it's an empty ideal. It must be admitted that those who think themselves fulfilled through the ideal of a void like that have in fact no passions. They do not suffer from the passions of life. But since there are no passions naturally, there is no Bodhi awakening. There's no awakening of wisdom. Believing their nature fulfilled by mere pictured concepts, they have, of course, none of the sufferings of life, and they have no sufferings. They cannot experience the real Bodhi awakening. The so-called no-I of people like this, which is built on concepts, is no more of a no-I, is no more than the no-I of a child. In the ironical sense, one could call them good, quiet people, happy people. It is a widespread aberration in our thought today that many think self-completion is attained by concept building and fail to make any effort towards the ideal. Even among Zen aspirants, the numbers who fall into the same error lying on the face or sleeping on the side, I have freedom, they quote, and they think they are getting up just when one likes is enlightenment, there and then, and that the state of Satori is to be express everything as it comes. Let me do that again. Lying on the face and sleeping on the side, I have freedom. They quote and think that just getting up when they want to is enlightenment there and then, and that the state of Satori is being able to express everything as it comes. So thinking this way, he thinks himself a Buddha. Now this is a good book. If you could only, and we can't even post it because I don't know how to get a PDF of it. But he talks about his failures as an abbot and how he's calm and cool and collected in one moment, and the next moment he filled with anger over a word somebody drops at him.
Hara Hara Mahadeva Shambho Kashi Vishwanath Gange. Hara Hara Mahadeva Shambho Kashi Shambho, Kashi Vishwanath Gange. Shivishwanatha Gange
Hara Mahadeva Shambho Kashi Vishwanatha Gange.
Look within. Within your own emptiness. Who is it that's looking within? Direct your attention towards the looker. Who's the looker? Where's the looker? While it's true there is no inner object, which is the I, there's still the subject, the looker, the one who's directing all of this. The Neo-Advaitas say, look within. But who are they talking to? They're talking to the looker. And the looker looks within. They say, what do you see? Who are they talking to? Find out who they're talking to. Look within. What do you see? I see nothing. I see nothing at all. Or I see emptiness. Or I see an emptiness filled with my own sense of presence and energy. Within I feel love flowing like a river, like an ocean. From the bottom of my toes, through my torso, out through my face, my head, outwards to all of you. Sometimes I feel the descent of grace from Robert and our own lineage of Ramana and Nisargadatta, Jean Dunn, Robert Adams. Going outwards to you, all of you. You're all blessed by consciousness. Does anybody have a question before I slip even deeper into non-thinking? John, do you have anything to say?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Ed?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
It's been weeks I've been trying to get the vocal thing going here.
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. I love the satsangs. You do remember who I am, right?
No. I see you in darkness. The right side of your face is completely dark.
Yeah, well, I have one lamp, and this is it. Yeah, I emailed you about 2 years ago. My wife, Callie, was having all the Kundalini problems. Remember that?
No. I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
Okay, well, yeah. I don't expect you to.
I've been blessed with a poor memory.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No memory and no projection. When I found you, I was looking for Gene Dunn.
Uh-huh.
And when I found your site originally, and I had an awakening back in 2009. It was a full awakening, and I was really thrown into this whole thing of not being able to speak. So I couldn't even form a thought. And that's when I emailed you. And if you remember, I told you my wife had left and I didn't know what to do with my two cats. Like I thought I might have to do something, actually do something other than just be. And you said, whatever you do, stay with the cats, just be with the cats And that's what I've been doing for 2 years now. I've
wow.
been sitting. I luckily didn't have to work. So I've basically been sequestered in San Francisco.
Time to come out, right?
That's
time to come back.
It's so funny. All the things you say, you know, they're so prescient. They're so really right. It's, of course, it's like that. My whole instinct to coming to the satsang, and I've become friends with Joanne and Alan and Tina, was to come for the energy. Just to, it's not being snobbish, but it's like, you know, all the people that are in my life, so to speak, are so wrapped up in mind things that they just think I'm kind of spaced out. So I've kind of retreated. I've retreated for, you know, it's been 3 years since this. It'll be 3 years in February since everything changed.
What is your daily experience? Tell me what your experience of yourself is like. Tell me about the emptiness and the presence and the peace and whatever you're going through.
The feeling it's what Ramana called the no I. It's like there's an I. There is an I, but it's not a personal I. And it's, you know, for me, I came from the generation, I'm 58, so I did go through a whole lot of experimentation with psychedelics when I was younger. And that was my first actual opening to there is more.
But what's your experience now?
My experience now is that it's a hologramic flow. It's
okay.
Moving. It's doing. I'm
what's
watching.
It? What do you mean? Articulate.
Okay, I'll try. It's the presence. I would say it's the vital breath. It's what Nisargadatta calls the make friends with the vital breath. It's doing. I'm watching what's happening.
Yes.
Most times I get pulled into things. I can't. There's no. I'm still vulnerable to getting pulled into.
Are you happy?
Yes, I am happy. I'm
okay.
not
Tell
happy.
Tell me about
or
your
I'm
happiness.
Happy.
Tell okay. Tell me about your state then. About that.
All right. I'm perfectly content. I am content.
Yes.
There's contentment.
But something's missing.
Yes, I honestly, what I'm feeling now, it's almost like enlightenment's boring. I have to
yes.
do something now.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
All right, so I'm fucking enlightened. Who cares?
Yes. Yes,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's time to bring a feeling back and bring your humanity
exactly.
back.
Exactly. And at first it was this feeling like, okay, I'm done. That's it. I'm done.
Yes.
But then I'm not done.
Yes.
So what do I do? So now what the hell do I do?
Yes. Follow my flute. We're all walking
oddly enough,
together.
Oddly enough, that has been the push. You know, there's a push for some reason, and it's, I don't know why. And I even said to Joanne, originally how my connection with Joanne happened is I emailed her and said, well, what about an ashram in LA? And you know, and it was just spontaneous. It was just a thought. But it's deeper than that. It's almost like you know, I care for my two cats. My devotion for them is unswerving. You did that to me, because at first the eye came back and said, oh my God, my wife has left. Where's the money? And I got all worried and like, I don't have to do a damn thing. It's going to be all right. If
right.
I just don't go there.
Yes, yes.
And you told me, you said to me, you don't remember this, obviously, but you said to me, I don't care if you're living in a mud pile or in a car. Take the cats with you, because that's your devotion.
Yes.
And I emailed back, I get it. And then I just sat. I was reading your site, and I was the blue page completely iced it for me. It really put all the pieces of the puzzle together, so to speak. And But there is now this definite, and tonight you were talking about passion, and the passions, I mean, the humanness is the absolute. It floats on it. It is it.
Yes, of course. They interpenetrate.
You can't.
The humanness
can't
and the emptiness
the
inter- right. But we have lost, we who have attained enlightenment, lost the humanity, and now we need it back.
Don't become a cold fish, as Robert
yes.
did.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So I'm afraid, though, with Robert, he did lose mostly. He was so far out of this world that he never was able to recover completely and come back again.
Right. Which is fine. That's yes. that expression. That's that
yes.
expression of what is.
Yes.
You know, and but from my perspective.
Yes.
I am feeling, and I wouldn't know how to plan it or how to do it, but I feel a definite. You know, I feel like I want to do something.
Yes, precisely, and that's what I've been working on is what I call taming consciousness. Giving consciousness a conscience, because the world is such a brutal place. And those of us who have had, let's been touched by the grace of God and have awakened, had awakening experience, it's up to us to sort of manifest our humanity through consciousness and to bring some conscience to consciousness, some love to consciousness, some direction in that way to consciousness.
Yes, it's almost like even though there's a witnessing of, or it's obviously doing itself, at the same time there's at some critical point a notion where notions arise of what to do, and you have to, you know, there's you just follow it, or you know, and the Sanghadatta talked about, well, action will assert itself when it's supposed to assert itself.
Yes,
and if there's resistance to that, maybe that's what, you know, there is some element, yeah, of okay, I will get involved, because you were still with, there's still the notion of doership, even though it's
yes.
obviously no doership.
Yes, whatever that means, but I get
whatever
you.
The hell that means.
You want to come back? That's what you mean. You want to come back and spread the love of that you kept with the cats to all, to everything.
Yes.
To expand it, expand your heart.
Yes. Yes.
Feel the passion again, the passion you had 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Right.
Yes. But now from the emptiness point of view, because it's so
yes.
accurate now, because you're living from your heart without your mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
The intuition is perfect. So welcome back. Where do you live?
In San Francisco.
Oh, where in San Francisco?
Hayes Valley, right by the Haight, is a little south
oh,
of
yeah.
the Haight.
Okay, good. Beautiful city.
Nice little neighborhood there where
yes,
where
I know. I know the San Francisco well.
Yeah. So,
I used to get drunk in Aquatic Park back in the late 60s and early 70s. Listening to bongo drums and drinking Ripple.
Yeah, the drums. Yeah. Right. Remember Ripple?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Aquatic
Very expensive
park.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I think $1.50, you were done.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Anyway, I do want to really thank you because, you know, that's, it was, you were right there. And that's why I'm here. I don't know.
Good for you, John.
Yeah.
We'll get together. We definitely will.
Yeah, I'd like to Skype. Joanne said you Skype.
Sure, of course. No problem. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Anybody else? Just raise your hand. Catherine online? Anywhere? Oh, you stream. Hi, Catherine. Catherine is our chief transcriber and turns out these talks into English language transcripts in a very short period of time. She's going to have a difficult time with this one because I talk too much. And I read and misread The Tiger's Cave, and she's not going to be able to find it in print anywhere. Good luck, Catherine. Anybody else? No. I'd like to know if there's any topics people want me to talk on in the next satsang, rather than me winging it each time. Usually what happens is something happens to me in the day or two or 3 days before satsang, and a theme comes into my mind, and usually it only manifests in the last 5 minutes or 10 minutes before satsang. I never know what I'm going to say. And, you know, usually it's some problem that arises in my life. We're having a dinner the night before and questions that are asked or something like that. And I'm just wondering, are there topics that people want me to cover? I won't do it, but I just like to know. Oh, please email me. Okay. Some topic suggestions. Boy, you've all become good for nothing. Perfect students. You're totally useless. That means you're very close to enlightenment. No more thinking, no more questions, no more pauses, no more hesitation. Just dumb as a rock. Good for you. I don't know. I don't understand it, because when I was with Robert and all the other teachers I've been with, people would be asking questions all the time, all the time. But we get on in our satsangs and nobody wants to ask a question. You're all very advanced. Let's have a couple of more thoughtful, plodding ones, like in the Valley of Sorrow and I Will Be Thine Always. These are the downers. We had several bliss-provoking chants, and now we're going to have the heart chants, the ones that grab you by the heart.
To see you, 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 you just. heart's aflame, my soul's afire. My heart's aflame, my soul's afire. Just for you.
My soul's a
passion. His voice had no passion whatsoever. Such a slow chant.
I am singing to you, my Lord, I will be thine always. Sing this song through the whisper of your heart, with all the heart-breaking devotion of your soul. Then he will ever be with you, from everywhere, within and without. You will feel his presence. My Lord, I will be thine all around. My Lord, I will be thine all around. I may go far, far around. Devotees may come, devotees may go, devotees may come, devotees may go, but I will not die.
Anybody go to sleep tonight? I have a hard time letting go tonight. I have separation anxiety. You have another little faster, more energetic chant to end it on?
Radhe, 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 Shyam Govinda, Radhe, Jai Radhe. Radhe Radhe Shyam Govinda Radhe Jai Shri Radhe 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 Radhe
Shyam Govinda Radhe
Jai Shri Radhe Govinda Radhe Radhe Shyam Gopal Radhe Radhe
Govinda Radhe Radhe Shyam Gopal Radhe Radhe
Govinda Radhe Radhe Shyam Gopal Radhe 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 Shyam Govinda Radhe Jai Shri Radhe
Radhe Radhe Shyam Govinda Radhe Jai Shri Radhe
Radhe Radhe Shyam Govinda Radhe Jai Shri Radhe
Well, I guess I'll see you next week. Next week, Christmas Eve? Good. Good. And then the following week will be the wine night. We'll end with a bottle of wine each. Bring Ripple. Take care. I love you all. Bye-bye.